Sikkim Sports presents the Sikkim Sportscast, a look at all things Baylor from recruiting to football, basketball, as well as news concerning the Big 12. Your hosts are publisher Kevin Lundquist and managing editor Jake Shaw. Our MC is Stephen Cook. Now it's time to talk Baylor, and here's Stephen Cook.
Welcome to the Sikkim Sportscast. I'm Steve Cook, and we have some breaking news on Jameson Houston. And Kevin, can you give me the skinny on it?
Well, this is a commitment that happened around 11:30, 11:45 on Wednesday. He is a defensive back out of Austin St. Michael's. Baylor had seen him during the evaluation period back in May when coaches could start going out and recruiting. They had him come up to a couple of their camps. The first one he attended was the June 8th camp in Waco on the Baylor campus. He had a bit of a hamstring issue in that game, so he could not, or in that camp, so he could not get to it and participate full throttle, if you will. But then they brought him back for the July 18th camp, and he really performed at such a high level for them. And of course, that was the same day too when he committed, that when he attended was the day that Patrick Hudson committed, as did Trent Dixon, the Navasota wide receiver. So that was kind of a, his performance was kind of got lost in all the big news that day. But nonetheless, the conversations took place with him and the coaching staff on Tuesday. He still did not have a Baylor offer until he got to the campus on Wednesday, and he told Jake that if they offered him on Wednesday, which they did, that he was going to commit, which he did. So Baylor's got a long defensive back. He's going to be a corner. He's 6'1", 6'2", closer to 6'2", maybe about 185 pounds. And in today's college football, where length and speed and athleticism at the corner is needed, Baylor got what they want. He's just a little bit under the radar because he plays for a private school in Austin and doesn't have a lot of the following that maybe other, you know, class 5A defensive backs or like a Kendall Sheffield would.
So being in Taps kind of helped keep him under the radar. This surprised everybody, right?
Absolutely it did. It's a kid where, you know, he's a dynamite athlete. He's a two-way player, two-and-a-half-year starter for St. Michael's. He's going to play again. He's going to be a starter. They're going to shift him this year from corner to safety because, as their coach, Daryl Pantalone told us, that the reason why they're shifting him to safety this year is because they need him to be a little bit more of a presence on the field. And if you're a corner, most of the time you're going to get isolated. So you're going to be in a position where you're really not going to be able to be involved in the defensive play in and play out. And in this case, he will be a part of it. But again, his foundation for playing safety comes from playing corner the last 2+ years at St. Michael's.
So they feel like he's got the physicality to come up to the line and help stop the run?
Yeah, that's the one thing that Coach Pantalone had shared, is that he loves his athletic ability and he loves his the way he pursues the ball. His pursuit angles are really, really strong, and he's extremely fast even. You know, he's another one of those track guys that the coaching staff, that Coach Art Briles and his staff really, really like, and yeah, that kind of speaks for itself.
Okay, anything else about Mr. Houston that we should know?
Well, one thing, you know, I touched on his speed a moment ago, the fact that he won the TAPS highest classification in the 200, which is his specialty event, at 21.5. If you put that speed at the Texas State High School track meet in Austin in May, if he runs it at the 5A level, he puts that time, runs him 8th. So he doesn't win it, and of course you take the state track meet, takes the top 8, top 9 in just about every event, he would have finished up the second division, but that still would have been a state qualifying time. So that's pretty impressive for someone, and that's legit speed. So the fact that a kid who loves track, is a great track guy, has some length, some physicality to him, a kid that was under the radar, you know, we talked about the fact that even though he's 2 stars, he did pick up a couple of offers from other BCS schools like Kansas State, a fellow Big 12 school, and Purdue out of the Big 10. So the fact that the name was starting to get out there more and more, and the fact that Baylor jumped in on this as quickly as it did once they saw him at the July 18th camp, it's a commitment that everyone will get to know about. And of course, we just have a scouting report on the Sikkim Sports talking to Coach Pantalone about everything concerning his athleticism. So it should be fun to kind of watch his progress throughout the 2014 football season.
Yeah, and that's – I didn't know that Kansas State had offered him. We had talked about earlier that he'd gotten offers from like schools like Tulsa that you don't expect to be able to compete with Baylor from a recruiting standpoint.
Right. Well, it just happens, you know, where it's – you know, Baylor's, I think it also represents, too, that, and this kind of touches back on the Trendavian Dixon commitment from earlier, is the fact that Baylor will still do its homework and they will evaluate every possible player that they think has a chance to play for them. And they liked what they saw with him with Houston, and obviously here we are now, and he's a Baylor Bear, and he says he's shutting down his recruiting. So it's a good day for Art Briles and his staff, no doubt.
Okay, well, we're going to see if we can get an exclusive interview with him this weekend, and that may happen if we can make it, if we can make the technicalities work. When we come back, we'll talk about the rest of the recruiting that's been going on around the Baylor campus.
Sikkim Sports provides daily coverage of Baylor athletics, from football recruiting, basketball recruiting, football news, and news regarding the Big 12. If you ever feel like you're not getting enough of Baylor news, give Sikkim Sports a try. Get onto Rivals.com, find the Baylor icons, and click all the way through to get subscribed to Baylor athletics with SikkimSports.com. Subscriptions at only $99 a year. Think of it as using a Subway lunch for once a month.
Okay, the Rivals 100 and 250 just came out. Kevin, you want to give us a quick update on how Baylor came out on that?
Very well, Stephen and Jake. Number one, the 100 was released on Monday, where Silsby offensive lineman Patrick Hudson, who had just changed his commitment from Texas A&M to Baylor, came out ranked at number 22, the highest that a Baylor committed player has ever been ranked in the history of the Rivals rankings, and I think much less any other source, but Rivals for sure. And that edged out who Katie actually in 2014 this year, but back in the summer of last year, he had peaked as high as 27 before he settled at 34. Then the 250 came out on Tuesday, where you had Port Arthur Memorial running back Cameron Martin come in at 152, and Grandview quarterback Zach Smith, the unknown, but not unknown anymore. He's now at 221. So you have Baylor now with three members in the 250, which I think if you had said this maybe back in 2010, even maybe Baylor's first bowl season under Art Briles in 2010, that they would have three members in the inaugural 2016 class that still has 17 months before it even, or 18 months rather, before it even signs letters of intent, that they have more committed players than Texas A&M, Oklahoma, and Oklahoma State combined. It'd be kind of stunning. Now, again, Oklahoma and Oklahoma State don't have any committed players yet, but nonetheless, pretty impressive stuff.
Yeah, very impressive. And, you know, while you were talking, Kevin, I did a quick look at last year's class, and I off the top of my head, I knew that Baylor had two top 250 guys. You mentioned Katie Cannon and Davion Hall. That was it. Baylor in the 2014 class had two top 250 guys. Already, with 2 years to go before signing day for the 2016 class, they already have three members in the top 250. Of course, things can change. You know, they update rankings. Maybe a guy falls out. But as of now, with the initial rankings, Baylor has three guys in the top 250. So, you know, you talk about Patrick Hudson being ranked 22nd, the highest ever. It's just basically unprecedented, too, with Baylor having three guys in the top 250. And the great thing is, there's only five guys in this class. They've got room to add more, and obviously they're going after more 250 guys. You wrote a good story about that this week on Sikkim Sports. So we're seeing Baylor's recruiting take off to a level that I think fans have been expecting it. You know, I get a sense from our readers on our message boards that this is something they should have been doing in the 2013 class, even. You know, I don't know if they needed to be more patient or if they're right, but Baylor, I think, is finally seeing the payoff from, you know, Big 12 title.
Yeah, and it's not – go ahead, Stephen.
Okay. Jake, you had expressed a little bit of concern about quarterback. Does having Smith come in here being ranked that high, does that make you feel a little bit better about the upcoming quarterback situation after Petty takes off?
That's a good question, because I have had a lot of concern. It's something that I, even though we're only entering the 2014 season, I keep bringing it up, and I'm sure people are sick of it. But it's a good question. My answer is yes and no. Yes, it helps, but it doesn't help in 2015 when Bryce Petty is gone and you're looking at Seth Russell, Chris Johnson, and Chad President. I think they needed someone like that in 2014 or 2013. I think they needed someone like that in the 2015 class too. So I hate to criticize Art Briles because he's doing just about everything right at Baylor, but I think 2015 could show maybe something that perhaps the staff didn't get right is have a quarterback ready to take up for Petty. I'll probably be proven wrong. I mean, Seth Russell might be the next Bryce Petty. I don't know. But 2015 class, the quarterback situation in 2015 does frighten me a little bit. So Zach Smith, no, he doesn't really answer that because he's not till 2016.
Yeah, and you probably won't even see him if things were to fall the way they were. You probably wouldn't even see him until maybe 2017,
yeah, exactly.
at the earliest. And so, but just to put this in perspective, and is the fact that this 2015 class, just to take a step back into the current recruiting cycle, even though they've got 10, they've got three guys from the 250 on that team.
That's true.
In that class, where you've got Blake Lynch, you got Chad President, Jamichael Hasty. So there is a Baylor presence there, although but this is going to be a pretty small class with this 2015 group. But I think what it continues to demonstrate, the one thing that I've noticed here about Baylor's recruiting, and I try to put the twist on it, whether it's journalistically the right way to look at it or not, but I find the recruitments for the 2016 class of Cameron Martin and Zach Smith part and parcel to how Baylor has always done business from a recruiting perspective, and how they are going to mix it up with the other notable football powers for the top players, but that doesn't mean that that's where they're going to stop, and they're going to keep mining the fields or whatever to go find these kids. And Zach Smith is the most important example of that. Again, I kind of equate his recruitment to like Devin Chafin, who was up at Burke Burnett. We talked about that last week. But then again, Martin, who was offered by 21 other programs, including, again, Florida State and Florida, Tennessee, folks like that, that Baylor's not only winning those battles, but Baylor still doesn't feel like it needs to settle to just only hold itself to those types of players. That can still go out and evaluate players that maybe no one else knows a lot about or knows at all, make a read on him like they did with Zach Smith, believe that he's the guy, even though Zach's playing at what would be now a 3A school, and feel like he can compete at the Big 12 level. And, like I said, when you look at Zach, that's what recruiting's all about. You've got to find kids that maybe no one knows about, and that's called doing your homework and having a bunch of contacts, too.
Well, yeah, sorry to interrupt you, Stephen. I don't think their goal is to say, let's find someone that no one else finds. I think their goal is just to find talent, and they watch film, they go out to spring practices, and they go to games, and if someone stands out, they're going to recruit them. I think they've just proven that they have a significantly better eye for talent at certain positions, mostly offensive skill positions. And so, a guy like Zach Smith maybe didn't show much to other people, but they saw something else in him. And I think they have a profile with every position on the field. It can change a little because you look at Zach Smith, he's nothing like an RG3. But they do have a profile, and they do know guys that fit into their system at certain positions. And that's who they go after. So, yeah, I think you're right, Kevin. They're going to mine for talent, but I think their goal is not to one-up everybody or find the diamond in the rough. They just want good players, and
right.
They don't care if they're a five-star or a no-star. They know what kind of body they like and what kind of athleticism and everything like that.
Right. With their contacts, they would know, if they get a call from a coach saying, you might want to come here and take a look at that kid or whatever, that they probably would take the coach at his word and would want to see him in person before they can decide at that point whether or not they want to push forward with it, or maybe they get a tip from somebody, you send them an email or whatever. Not saying that they check it all out, but at the same time, I think that they're actually doing what recruiting, they kind of personify what recruiting should be, is you got to go out and find kids, regardless of where they might be. I mean, heck, if they're going over to Australia-defying linemen or something like that. I mean, that kind of shows you where they're at in terms of looking at these kids as well and where they will go to try and find them to see if they'll be contributing members to the roster.
Yeah, you have to be open.
I noticed on this, one is that they're not afraid to mine the small schools. You know, Grandview's 3A, but a few years ago it was 2A. I mean, it just came up 3A pretty recently.
Right.
You know, they don't mind going to the small schools. And I think the other thing, it goes back that Browse has a thing going because he was a Texas high school coach for so long. He knows a lot of these guys, and he stayed in touch with them.
Mm-hmm.
No, yeah, I agree. And I think kind of on the flip side, you know, these high school coaches, they have egos too. And, you know, I think it's probably strokes their ego a little bit when they can reach out to Bryles and he comes back to them and is, you know, positive in his response and maybe comes out and visits. You know, I think it's a pat on the back to these high school coaches when a college coach takes the time to listen to them. And I feel like they, it helps their ego. It's a stamp of approval when a guy like Bryles will listen to him. So you know, it's a great situation to have. And like you said, Cook, Stephen, you don't mind if I call you by your last name, do you? he's one of them. And I've had multiple high school coaches tell me that you know, he came from their ranks and he understands what, you know, they go through, and he can empathize and relate to them, and you know, that helps. And I think you're kind of seeing that maybe a little with Charlie Strong and his staff at UT, maybe a little slower start for what Texas has been compared to Baylor and A&M, because he doesn't have those relationships yet.
Okay, moving along, Malik Jefferson. He's Rivals' number 19 2015 recruit. He visited Sunday. Does Baylor have a chance with him?
Kevin, you've talked to him more.
Yeah, I think with Malik, it's an interesting commitment. This is the fourth known visit that Malik has made to the Baylor campus. Was there back in the spring, made two other visits right before the 2013 football season. And I think the way to interpret that, I know he's interested. I know he is going to give Baylor a serious look. I mean, he brought his family with him up through Waco. He was in Austin on Saturday visiting Texas. And obviously it makes sense if you're driving up I-35 and you're going to go to Austin, Waco's right on the way back, so why not stop by and hang out for a few hours? I mean, it makes perfect sense, and you should do that. You know, I still can't get a good feel as to where Baylor stands in this. What I can say is I do think that Baylor is starting to make more of an impression with them. How much more can they – I know some people believe that A&M is the team to overcome here. Maybe that's the case. He hasn't said anything. He's played it really close to the vest on whatever he said. He has said that he's going to announce – after the football season, probably in December. I think one thing that would really help Baylor is that if Malik starts to schedule his official visits, and if one of those five during the football season is to Baylor, that really kind of shows you where Baylor is in this race. If it's not, then we kind of know where Baylor is in all this. So I think if he's going to take an official, he's got five, and more than likely one of those is going to be to College Station to go see A&M. Another one's going to probably be to Austin to go to Texas. But, you know, again, look at where Baylor is in terms of its landscape and how it's competing against these other folks now for players like Malik Jefferson, where, you know, it as early as maybe 3 years ago, four, Baylor would have extended the offer, and that's about as far as it would have gotten. Now they're getting these kids on campus and at least getting themselves into the conversation with these kids.
Yeah, I agree, Kevin. And I'm not going to put a percentage on his chance, Baylor's chances with him. I don't think anyone can put a reasonable, well-informed percentage on his chance, just because, from what he said, he's going to take his time. But Baylor does have a chance, and that's what you're just pointing on there. He's listening to Baylor. He's not only listening, he's visiting, and he's taking his family, and that's what you want. You want a chance with a guy like this. I don't think Baylor's in a position where they're counting on him, because you know, they understand they're in for a fight, and you know, they have another linebacker already committed. So, but they have a good chance, and you know, I don't want to read too much into certain tweets, but I know on Tuesday he tweeted, all he said was, SEC, Big 12, Big 12, Pac 12. The way I read that is he was talking about four schools that he likes. SEC, I'd say, is A&M, Big 12, twice Texas and Baylor, Pac 12. I don't know which one he's referring to there. I haven't followed.
Might be Oregon, but I have to.
Yeah, Oregon too. But yeah, so you know, who knows? That we're to the point though where these cryptic tweets or whatever they say, you know, we have to try to read into them some. But he visited. You know, he came through, and it's not the first time he's been there. You know, he takes a picture with a Baylor jersey on. I know all the recruits do that still, but he's giving his time willingly to visit Baylor. You know, that, again, that's all you want. I mean, you like your chances if you put Art Briles and his staff with the recruit and his family. He's not going to win everyone, as we've seen, but he's going to give Baylor a great chance.
They had every reason to not, on the drive back from Austin on Sunday morning, to keep the steering wheel steady and go straight. And all they had to do, but all they did was they kind of swerved it a little bit over to the right, took the exits, got over to the Baylor campus, visited with the coaches, got a tour of McLean Stadium. I mean, it's, again, that's what happens when you've won, been to four consecutive bowl games, you're coming off a Big 12 championship, you're opening up a $260 million stadium on campus, you've beaten, you've shown that you can compete with the best in the conference with Texas and Oklahoma. It matters. It really matters.
Sure. Kevin, who would you think, out of all the assistants, would you say, if you had to pick a best recruiter on the Baylor staff, who would you say it is?
Well, I think it's a real toss-up because it's, you know, Kendall Briles was our Big 12 Recruiter of the Year for Rivals in 2014. Had a great year. Remember, he got Davion and he got KD Cannon, just to name it two. I think he brought. I think he also brought in Ishmael Zamora while I'm thinking about it as well. But, you know, I would but Kendall had a great year. Jim Gush has had a really good track record. I mean, what was it back in the 2013 class? He had like nine kids or something like that. And Jeff Levy, the running backs coach. Now, Jeff is the one that found Trendavion Dixon in Navasota.
I guess, you know, it's hard to pick. My point is
Kendall maybe with a slight edge, but I mean, at the same time, you know, but the thing that helps us is that you need arrows in the quiver, and each of these coaches has something to offer these kids and to tell. They have something to tell in this story with these kids of all their accomplishments. You got two important pieces of hardware sitting in your school trophy case with a Heisman Trophy and a Big 12 championship. Kids are visual. I said this a million times. Kids are visual. They want to see it, and Baylor has something to show them.
Yeah, I guess the reason I asked that, I thought Kevin, first of all, you'd be brief, but what was I asking for?
Yeah, no, golly. Stop the world.
I thought, you know, maybe you'd answer. My thought, you'd say Jim Gush. I thought that's who you'd say. Just because I know Briles, Kendall Briles, has been hot lately. Mm-hmm. I think you talk about arrows in the quiver, excuse me. Mm-hmm. He has more. He's been doing it for a longer time. So, all you know, right. Based on longevity, I thought you might have said him. The reason I asked that is because, you know, he coaches linebackers. Malik Jefferson's a linebacker. So I think you have basically your ace recruiter as your lead recruiter with him, and I think that matters too. I think that helps Baylor's chances. You know, I know Jefferson in an interview talked about his relationship with Gush and basically said I can't remember what he said. He treats me like he's maybe like a son or like I'm already on the. I can't remember what his comment was.
Right.
It was something along the lines of basically saying they have a very strong relationship. So
yeah, he's been. That's one thing that that Gush has done is he is really every time that he gets a kid. And I've talked to kids about him, whether it's going to be a wide receiver that it might be up in the northern part of the Dallas-Fort Worth area or whatever, that Jim just has a way of talking to kids. And, again, it's the communication skills that these kids have or the communication skills that these coaches have with the kids. And relationships matter. This is the guy that you're going to be with for the next 4 or 5 years of your life.
And that's why I bring it up because, I mean, how many times have you been told when you ask a kid – what are his priorities when picking a university? You know, obviously, playing time, location. But one of the things that pops up a lot for me is position coach. You know, because at the high school level, they know they're spending a lot of time with their position coach, more than any other coach, really. So that's going to be the same way in college, and they want to like their position coach. You know, a wide receiver coach could be the lead recruiter on a defensive lineman, but he's going to want to like that defensive line coach. And, again, I think it really helps Baylor that – that, you know, maybe I'd say the lead recruiter is Gush, and he's recruiting a guy at that position. So, again, I think that's something that works in Baylor's favor.
Okay. I'm going to throw in one thing before we go. I heard, you know, a couple of our readers have, you know, said, hey, how come Baylor isn't – now, they're not saying it this last week, but they've been saying, hey, how come Baylor isn't cashing in on this Big 12 title more? The thing is, the level of player we're going after now, or that Baylor is going after now, is it's a player that has more options. You know, they just have more options now than they used to have, and than the guys that they used to be going after. Because when you're competing against, I don't want to name a school that and insult them, but when you're competing against lower level schools, those guys don't have the offers. They can't compete. They can't compete. These guys are getting offers. They're getting 10, 15, 20 offers. And so they're going to take more time because they've just got more options.
Yeah. I agree with everything you said. I think sometimes, fans often don't look at things objectively. You know, let's be honest. I cover Baylor, but I also went to Baylor, so I secondarily, when it comes to the side, I consider myself a Baylor fan, but I try to see things from somewhat, when I look at Baylor's recruiting, I try to look at it not from my Baylor standpoint, but from someone who's an outsider. And I think people sometimes, look, you know, Baylor's been great these last 4 years, but they're not the only program that has been doing good things on the field. Since RG3's won as Heisman, two other guys have won it since then. Guys won it before. Other teams have won their conference. Other teams have gone bowling. Other teams have added to their facilities. So I think it's kind of a myopic view to think that since Baylor's doing so well, we should be just running the table with these recruits. Well, you know, there's probably 25 other programs that think the same thing. And to your point, Stephen, those are the programs that now Baylor is competing more against in recruiting. So, you know, the fact that Baylor isn't tearing it up hasn't surprised me. It's surprised, like you said, a lot of our readers. But it's just you're competing. Your competition is going up, and therefore, you know, by logic, you're probably not going to win as many because you have more people going after the same recruit as you are.
Okay. Now, moving along, Meet the Bears has become a pretty big recruiting event. That's where KD Cannon committed last year. Kevin, it's coming up this Saturday. Anything you're expecting from that?
Well, I mean, it's going to be August the 9th. Baylor starts their practices on Tuesday, April the 5th. Players report on the 4th. And what they've generally or traditionally done is kind of turn that first Saturday of the fall camp into kind of a festive, kind of like a festival, if you will, for fans to get to know the players. It'll be kind of a light scrimmage. They really won't do a whole heck of a lot in terms of showing a lot. They'll obviously get some work and that sort of thing. But traditionally speaking, you're right. It's become an event where a lot of recruits come down there. KD Cannon, as you mentioned, committed at this event a year ago, 2013. That's what kind of really changed. That might be the commitment that really kind of changed Baylor's national perspective as a whole when he committed to them. And so I think, you know, it's too early to say, but I mean, a couple of players that we know that'll be there, or at least expect to be there, because these things are always fluid, is Jamichael Hasty, the Longview running back, who's already committed to Baylor. He's actually thinking about coming in on the Friday the 8th, staying overnight, and then coming back on the 9th. And then the talented Sachse wide receiver, Devin DuVernay, who Baylor has really been after quite a bit since basically January, sounding like he was going to get down there to go watch that practice go out there. I don't know if anything's going to come out of it, but you never know. It just kind of depends on how the relationship is going with him and Baylor at the time, and everything points to a very solid relationship. I checked with him about that not long ago, and the last time I actually talked to him face-to-face was at the Baylor camp at Lake Highlands, where he kind of gave a pretty good glowing feeling about where he stood with the Bears.
Okay, and you're going to be there, and I'm going to try to be there, so if anything happens, it'll be on the site.
Yes, sir.
It'll be on the site fast.
Yeah, I think Are you there, Steven?
I'm here.
Okay, I lost you. Sorry, guys. I think, Kevin, you hit on the head. I think as far as this practice is concerned, this Saturday, it's probably the least important practice as for, you know, when it comes to preparation for the season for the team. But it might be one of the most important ones when it comes to recruiting. You know, I'm to the point, Kevin, where, you know, people ask me, you know, when we go on ESPN Central Texas and when readers, they want us to predict the next commitment for 2015 especially. I keep drawing blanks. It is impossible because...
Is 2015 going to be a 15-member class?
It could be. It could be more. I think it just really hinges on Baylor's staff's evaluation of players during the fall season. Because I think it... I mean, when I'm asked to predict, I can't because the guys that they're recruiting just have so many options, one, and two, they keep saying they're going to wait, that it's just there's no one right now that we feel like is on the verge. I mean, I thought Baylor was in good standing with Connor Dyer, and he committed to Texas Tech on Tuesday. You know, there's a guy off the board. It's a really shrinking list of recruits that have Baylor offers but aren't committed anywhere else. And that's Baylor hasn't offered a ton of people. They've been very selective. So, you know, I can't ever predict the next 2015. Maybe you can, Kevin.
You know, the only one I can think of that comes to mind who might – me the next 2015 commitment, whether or not he picks Baylor or not, or the one who's going to make this decision would be Khalil Houghton.
He was
expected to make another quick trip over to Baylor on Wednesday. I don't think there was going to be a commitment decision coming out of that. He has said in our podcast last week that he was probably going to make that decision known before Waco Midway begins practices on the 11th. So, you know, aside from him, I don't see anyone really that Baylor is going to pursue here. And, you know, the number of recruits for this 2015 class, guys, if it gets above 15, that might be breaking news. And, of course, that will impact, from a negative standpoint, that will impact Baylor's national ranking. But because, you know, how they kind of use their scholarships for players and things like that, guys. It's going to be impacted negatively just because they're not going to sign a full complement. So it's going to, and that's okay. But the thing is that they want to sign the right 15.
That's exactly right. And frankly, there's not room for 15 signees in the 2015 class right now. There's not enough scholarships to go around. I think there are only 8, 9, or 10. I'm losing the number off the top of my head, but there's only 8, 9, or 10 scholarship seniors right now. So that's signing 5 more than you have, you know, room for. So, yeah, there's not room for it. Obviously, there's going to be attrition, but you don't want to sign 22 guys and then have to tell 5 of them they're going to gray shirt, especially since the caliber of player you're signing is better. So, right. I think, you know, we went into this recruiting calendar thinking 18 to 20, but that number has shrunk for sure, and there are a lot of factors for that, but I think 15 is looking at the maximum end.
When you're playing, I think they carry 85 on the roster normally.
Yeah.
Some of those guys will never see the field. They'll never get off the practice squad. Do you think maybe Baylor's just saying we'd rather not spend a scholarship or spend a position on somebody that's never going to see the field?
No, I don't think so at all. I think if you could have 100 scholarship players or 120, Art Briles would take it, and I think every coach would too. You know, the scholarship money for these players is coming out of their pockets. So, you know, I think they would want to just to keep other players out of other schools. And, I mean, you saw last year you had injuries and depth became an issue for this team. So, no, I think every team wants 85, and they want a strong stable of walk-ons too. So I don't think it has anything coming down with not thinking, you know, either money or coming down to not thinking a guy's going to play. I don't think Baylor is ever going to sign a guy they don't think can see the field.
No. The only thing I would say to that is, and also I think with this year too, with the 2014, there might be a couple of walk-ons who could get scholarships. We touched on Colin for this year, which really wouldn't matter anyway in terms of the 15 class, but because his scholarship would come off after this year anyway. But having said that, I think, you know, they're just being very judicious. This is kind of an interesting next couple of years for Baylor recruiting because, again, 15 maybe at the most for this class, maybe, you know, 20 at the most, but not much, but maybe not much beyond that, or a little bit, you know, give or take, with the 16 class. So that's where we're kind of at. But I also think too, you know, Jake, you touched on, I know we've got to wrap this up, but you know, Jake, you touched on the fact about how the injuries really, you know, impacted this team in the second half of the 2013 season. But I also think too, it validated how good the recruiting was, because the depth really picked it up and kept things going. Especially the running back position with guys like Jack Linwood and Devin Chafin.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it just shows that, you know, why if anyone in the media thinks Baylor's going to fall off, they're just not really paying attention closely, because the overall depth is so much better that you can lose an all-conference left tackle, an all-conference middle linebacker, an all-conference receiver, and you know, and still win a conference championship. So, you know, we talked about it last podcast, what the maybe the floor is for this team, and I said it's probably 7 or 8 wins is the worst this team can do, and it's because the recruiting is so much better, and there's now talent at every position and deeper. You know, we're doing this series on Sikkim Sports where we're rating all the units on every Big 12 team, and what was it, the first 5 we did, Baylor was at the top, and, you know, we both joked about on the site how we're trying not to rank Baylor first because we don't want to look like homers, but hey, it's just a simple truth. Baylor is great at a lot of the places on the field, and that's because of recruiting.
Admittedly, we know this team better than other teams, and we have, if you will, cursory glances at these other teams. Maybe we know Texas a little bit more just because we're around that team. Steven.
Okay. When we come back, we're going to get into those rankings of the position groups a little bit deeper, and we're going to talk about Devontae Jones and a couple of other things that are coming up. So we'll be back on the flip side.
The start of the weekend can't start without the Baylor Blitz. Every Friday, Sikkim Sports, staple of Baylor recruiting, basketball, and news, a summation of what happened during the week and what's to come, and any other inside information is always available on Fridays in the Baylor Blitz at SikkimSports.com.
Okay, we're back, and do either of you have a feel on what's going on with Devontae Jones right now as far as him being able to get on with the team?
He is, for those who don't know, he is the 2014 offensive lineman out of Houston Bel Air. That was one of those other recruits that came out of nowhere one day last summer. Jake, remember that when we found that out?
I was actually on the golf course. I remember that well.
I was actually in the movie theater watching the Jackie Robinson movie in the theater when I saw that went out. And so anyway, but Jones, from what we've reported on the site, which was on Monday afternoon, that he has academically qualified to get into Baylor. He has not gotten through the NCAA clearinghouse. The latest that we can tell our listeners is that everything points to him getting successfully cleared through the NCAA clearinghouse, and that he could be on the Baylor campus at some point the week of August 4th. You know, those things, that's kind of a moving target in terms of the time frame, but I think that's kind of what everyone that we've talked to believes will happen there, which would be a great thing for him. Obviously, he's going to redshirt this year because he hasn't gone through a lick of summer workouts, and that would be okay as far as Baylor is concerned, I'm sure, because they want to make sure that, you know, they just get him on campus and get him working with the strength and conditioning program with Kaz Kazadi, and then kind of going from there. So that's a good sign for Baylor that he was able to kind of get through the academic situation there.
Yeah, and that's been consistent with the information we had heard all along, is that we really believed he would make it in, just knew that it wasn't going to be as simple or as quick as it is with most other recruits. In fact, I remember one of us texted with him before signing day. I don't know if I even should bring this up in the podcast, but I don't know if we texted with him, and I think he got a little concerned that he thought we were saying he wasn't going to qualify. Do you remember this, Kevin?
Yeah, the story was that I think there was some confusion as to whether or not he might grayshirt or something like that or whatever. That kind of got all lost in translation. I said, no, that's not what is going to happen. We're just asking you that.
I think maybe he got confused, thought we were representing Baylor, which Right. Bale would be highly angry about that.
Right. No, yeah. I mean, but everything's good there. I mean, he's your typical of your offensive line, very soft-spoken kid, heart of gold. Now he's got a chance to get on campus and really do something. It's been talked about that once he gets on campus that he's probably going to look at a guard spot, maybe center. He could be the heir apparent there. So we're just going to have to wait and see.
You mentioned, well, he's not going to play this year. I don't think that was ever the plan, and I don't think you want him to play this year. You got enough depth where you're not going to rely on a guy like this to get meaningful minutes. It's better for him to redshirt. Sure, it would have been nice for him to come in the summer, but you didn't need it. I think, like I said, consistent with everything we heard that he would make it in. It would be late, and you know that's what happened. So it's good that he finally got in, and you know that means what? This class only had one casualty, if I remember.
Two. James David and TK.
Well, James David, that's another.
Well, now he was never going to get in anyway. So
I mean, you and I think. You know, we talked about last week with the Waco High commit. We were saying he wasn't a commitment, the 2016 right. kid. You know, we weren't lone wolves. Other people were reporting that. We weren't lone wolves with James David. We said all along that we're not going to consider this a commitment because he's not going to make it to Baylor. So I don't consider him a casualty. I think all along we knew this guy was not going to be on the Baylor campus.
I think that was, you know, and to finish the point on David, yeah, because we had listed James as a soft verbal, and we explained to our readers back at the time that because of those reasons of his academic situation, knowing that he had a ton of work ahead of him, I know we're kind of getting off the track here a little bit, but David's commitment very much went along the same lines of Eric Cuffey when he just blurted out one day that I'm committing to Baylor, and everyone's accepting it at face value, and we all kind of, and you and I, and back then, and as we did a couple weeks ago, said, wait a second. And so, yeah, I was asked this, even though we're talking about from a recruiting perspective, and even though we are talking about Devontae Jones originally here, but you know, it kind of goes back to, you know, what people said, well, why would you take another kid on social medias, except, you know, tweeting out that he's committing to so and so versus somebody else? And that would be based on track record. When you know a kid, like a Cameron Martin who committed to Baylor and announced it on social media that he was committing to Baylor. Okay, well, we've had enough conversations with Cameron, and we know that his interest in his situation with Baylor has been very valid and with other schools.
Yep.
You've had enough communication with him over the in the yeah. past. You know that. With Cuffey, and again, not saying again, you can use the Devin Chafin thing too as saying what's going on here. But once you kind of, but the Cuffey thing was so far out of left field that that's where you was kind of like where we had to go and step back and say, well, let's make sure we know what we have here. We still had to do it with Devin Chafin too, but still.
Well, and a couple more things on that. You know, 9 out of 10 recruits, we usually know a bit of their backstory. Mm-hmm. We didn't know Cuffey's at the time, so that's when you have to do much more reporting because you need to know about this guy, and that's sometimes when you find out. Maybe perhaps it wasn't legit. You know, Zach Smith was another guy. He's a guy that we didn't know a ton about. Barely knew his name, if that. You know, when he committed, we had to do our research and we had to talk to our sources and confirm it. You know, we went through the same process with Smith as we with Cuffey. Turns out he did commit. Turns out Cuffey did not.
I'm going to live by the mantra. I'm going to live by this. This is going to be my words to live by when it comes to recruiting. Recruiting is weird, and I'm just going to leave it at that.
Well, and one more thing on this is that I don't know when it started. I think it was somewhere in the 2014 class. I don't think it happened in 2013, but coaches obviously cannot comment on recruits, but that doesn't stop them from these subliminal tweets or these, you know, cryptic tweets. You know, Art Briles now, he does an area code and he says dream big, dream Baylor, you know, the hashtags. Mm-hmm. I can't remember when it started, but the last 15, 20 commitments, he definitely did that with each of them. You know, he did it with Zach Smith, he did it with Cameron Martin. He never did a 254 with Eric Cuffey. So, you know, that's that's about as much as you sign as you can take if a coach doesn't do it. So, you know, I don't know how he got off topic. I guess Devontae Jones, his whole commitment, but yeah. Stephen, steer the ship back on course.
Okay. All right. Well, we've been doing a series. Jake and Kevin have been doing the by position groups ranking the teams in the Big 12. And if you look, if you want to see Kansas number one, you got to turn your monitor upside down. so what we'll do is let's talk about where Baylor stands on some of these rankings.
Sure. Well, you know, you're wrong, Stephen. I had Kansas number one in small forwards.
Okay.
No. Yeah, they have been toward the bottom. You know, it's funny. Kansas, I think, ranked last in every offensive category, which their coach is known as offensive genius, so I think that's totally ironic. But, yeah, we talked last week about the quarterbacks. Since then, we've done running backs, receivers, offensive line. Kevin, you did the running backs, and, you know, that was an evolving ranking because there was breaking news. You know, talk about your running back rankings.
Yeah, I mean, I thought this series was going to get cursed the way it was going because it was the second piece because you did the quarterbacks and then I do the running backs, and I had Texas number one, and that came out fine on Thursday. Come to find out on Friday morning, that's when all heck breaks loose when you have Joe Bergeron getting kicked off the team, and then we have Baylor number two. And then I talked about Oklahoma being, you know, how Joe Mixon, their star stud running back recruit out of California who was part of the 2014 class, now he's under investigation for an incident at a nightclub in Norman last week. There's no, apparently as of this time, there's been no arrest made, but obviously his situation's so up in the air, so it's like, could it get any worse for this series? I'm like, gosh, do we need, it's like, it's kind of like, You put these series out on paper, and then you kind of flinch and say, boy, I hope this is right, and is everyone behaving themselves? But, you know, it's just the exception to the rule. It was a tough week for the Big 12, the Big 12 last week for sure.
Yeah, it's funny. You know, no arrest, but definitely someone with a broken nose. So something's not quite adding up there in the Joe Mixon case. You know, I think I did receivers next. And, you know, more than what Baylor ranked, to me, this has been pretty revealing about it's just been a great chance for you and me to do some extended research on the rest of the Big 12. And I think my biggest takeaway is that Baylor is so much better off, at least offensively, with players they have coming back than the rest of the conference. I mean, there's not another team that returns just people at every position group like Baylor does. And then defensively is that Baylor's not as worse off as I thought they were. I'm doing the defensive backs. That's coming out. Well, that's actually out yesterday if we're talking in the right tense. And Baylor, I thought, was going to rank 9th or 10th just because you have a 5-man defensive backfield when that includes the nickelback, and you only return one starter. They're in the same boat as several other teams. Oklahoma State also has a 5-man defensive backfield. They only return one starter. Right. Several other programs going through the same thing. You know, Oklahoma, I thought I liked their defensive backfield, and I still think it's good, but, you know, they only return two starters. So this has been a very educational series, hopefully for the readers, but definitely for me. I think on our first podcast, I said I'm going to pick Oklahoma to win the Big 12. I'm on the fence now, and I'm really leaning strongly toward Baylor right now winning the Big 12 because I think Baylor is a lot better off than I realize relative to their competition.
I did the offensive line, and I realized that some people might have been a little bit concerned about whether or not Spencer Drango with back injuries, and it's a valid concern about how effective is he going to be basically 8 months removed, 8-9 months removed from the back surgery that he had, but he's been cleared for fall camp, and he's still going to be considered one of the top offensive linemen in the conference. He's a preseason All-Big 12 performer. Then you've got Troy Baker on the right side. You've got Desmond Hilliard at one of their guard spots. So you've got three starters coming back. from that team last year, which is a pretty good number. All you have to do is mix in your center with Kyle Fuller, who's probably going to be in that spot. Left tackle, I think it's Laquan McGowan at this point. That might be subject to change. What's that?
Yeah, left tackle. I think you mean left guard.
I mean left guard, excuse me. Yeah, you got Kyle Fuller, but Kyle got enough playing time last year. And that was the good thing, at least that a lot of these guys are moving into the starting roles this year, at least had enough game experience last year to kind of get the speed of the Division I game, even in the blowout wins over KU.
It helped.
In West Virginia. But the other thing is, and one other thing, Jake, too, is that but Oklahoma is right there with them. Now, Oklahoma's got to replace Gabe Eicher, but they got both their tackles and both their guards coming back. And then you've got a pretty solid Kansas State group, even though Kansas State is the one program in this conference that's always good, and nobody knows anything about them every year until the season starts. But they probably got the best center in the conference in B.J. Finney. So those would be the top three offensive lines in the conference.
See, I liked Baylor's offensive line last year when it's full strength. I thought Kansas State had the best offensive line in the conference. Just watching them, I thought they were the best unit. Going back to Baylor, you mentioned Troy Baker. I think that's a bonus. You know, he didn't play but two or three games last year. I look at that as a real bonus. Like, it's getting an extra starter back almost just because he didn't play and Baylor's forced to adjust without him. And then I think another guy who's an X factor there is Blake Mir, the transfer from Hawaii who's from Australia. He started 12 games at Hawaii, so you know he's coming off another redshirt year. He had to sit out, but here's a guy with major college experience starting 12 games. I think he's going to take over at left guard. I think McGowan maybe, you know, he was listed as co-starter with Mir. I think Blake Mir ends up becoming the starter at left guard just because, one, he's a known quantity, and two, I don't know if McGowan is going to, just at his size, be capable of, one, playing a full game. I mean, that's going to take it out on the offensive linemen, especially with the speed Baylor plays. I think Mir has a great chance of being a starter.
And quickly on the linebackers today, which ran on Tuesday, was the fact that we had Oklahoma. I had Oklahoma ranked number one, Texas number two. I had Baylor ranked four in that group behind TCU, who I had at number three. My feeling about those was that number one with Oklahoma, obviously Frank Shannon's not technically back on the roster yet, but everything I checked with our Oklahoma colleagues and everyone seems to think that everything is trending in the right direction for Frank to be there. So I kind of worked with a little bit hedging my bet a little bit with OU, but nonetheless, to me I think they probably got arguably the best linebacker in the conference who's not named Bryce Hager. In Eric Stryker. Stryker had a great finish to the season, played an outstanding Sugar Bowl. Remember, he had the play where he stripped A.J. McCarron, and that led to the game-sealing touchdown for Oklahoma over Alabama in the Sugar Bowl. I think Eric's going to be an outstanding pass rusher coming off the edge. Then you got another kid by the name of Dominique Alexander, who was pressed into duty last year and really handled the transition pretty well. I think he made his debut in the Texas game, if memory serves, and has really come on. Then you look at the Texas group. Jordan Hicks comes back from the Achilles injury. I think he's the key to that group. It's a pretty good-looking unit right there. There's obviously some people who don't like Steve Edmund, and obviously Steve Edmund's off-the-field remarks about Baylor and the trash comments kind of speak for themselves, which was completely ridiculous, but that's another story. He's a pretty solid linebacker. I think he'll probably play with a little bit more toughness under Charlie Strong's guidance. I mean, Charlie wouldn't put him in the middle or keep him at starter if he didn't think that he couldn't handle the position. That's really up to him to really kind of make it. But there's some pretty good depth there, too, with that Texas linebacker core. So I think they'll be okay there as far as the Texas linebacker core is concerned. TCU's got some really good starters there. Dawson, one of those kids, is really kind of stands out. Had a great year, came on strong. With Baylor, you got a great guy in Bryce Hager that leads the group. He's the captain of the defense. Basically, he's going to direct everything. But we don't know yet about how well Avian Edwards, if he's really going to secure that other spot. I like Avian's game a lot. I think he's physical enough to play it. We just don't know enough about it yet to see if he can really. We won't know about that until really October.
No, he won't. And I'm glad you brought that up because you talked about Alexander at OU is pressed into duty because of injuries. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the silver linings of injuries is during the season you hate him, but come next season it gave you a chance to play some guys who probably wouldn't have played otherwise, and now they have some bonus experience because of another guy who's injured. And Baylor didn't get that with Avion Edwards. They could have, when Bryce Hager was out. But you remember how many linebacker iterations we saw with Baylor? We had Eddie Lackey moving to middle linebacker. I think we had Sam Hall moving around. We tried Ahmad Dixon back at nickelback. They did everything but put Avion Edwards in a major role last year. And I think part of that is that they wanted to win a Big 12 title, and they just perhaps they thought Edwards wasn't ready to be on a defense capable of doing that. So I think they missed a chance to maybe play with him last year. Obviously, it worked out. You won a Big 12 championship. But he's a guy that I thought should have gotten a lot more playing time last year based on injuries and didn't. So, again, you're right. I don't think we'll know until maybe the first couple of games of the Big 12 season unless he's just outstanding in non-conference play.
Yeah, the other concern, too, is the nickelback situation there. Again, we've gone through that ad nauseum with Colin Brents and maybe Trevon Blanchard back there, and that's just a situation that's going to have to play itself out still. Because I'm still, God bless Colin Brents. I think he's a really heady player, understands the game, coach's kid. But when you really need athleticism on the field, when you get neck deep into the Big 12 season, and that guy is kind of a hybrid where he has to be a run support guy, and he also has to drop back into the pass coverage, is he going to have the athletic ability to do it against Oklahoma's wide receivers, Texas's wide receivers, Oklahoma State's wide receivers, that kind of stretch?
Yeah. Now, Kevin, here's a question that might blow your mind, but I'm going to ask it anyway. So we're ranking every unit. What if you were to rank the importance of the units themselves, basically saying, what's the most important unit in the Big 12? I'd probably say quarterback is number one. What would you say is second? Unless you disagree with quarterback being the most important unit.
No, your quarterback makes your football team. I think your second most important unit on your football team is your defensive line. Because if you do not have, that's no disrespect to your offensive line, but if you do not have a defensive line that can, one, push the line of scrimmage and can dictate how an offense can or cannot move the football, and if you've got some really good defensive tackles that can really flood things up and kind of open some space for your linebackers to make plays, if you've got a really good defensive line, it really, really makes a difference. I mean, we saw it in the BCS championship game with Notre Dame and Alabama, and how that game was just pretty much decided with both the Alabama offensive line and the Alabama defensive line. I think I can remember, too, if you go back to that Baltimore Ravens defense that won the Super Bowl when they beat the Giants, what was it, 2000, 2001, or whatever that was, that defensive line was probably the most impressive-looking group. And, of course, for all of us gray hairs, and Steven and I can go back to when football was played in leather helmets, but those Pittsburgh Steelers teams of the late 1970s, when everyone could rattle off that defensive line with Mean Joe Green, LC Greenwood, guys like that, it's your defensive line. If you've got a great defensive line, you always give yourself a chance to win every single game.
That's funny. I've asked you two questions in this podcast. Both of your answers have been not what I predicted, but I think you've talked me into both of your answers tonight. One was Kendall Briles is the top recruiter. Fine. I think you're right on the defensive line. I was leaning toward either offensive line or defensive backfield. And the reason I would have said defensive backfield is just because of how much passing is done in the Big 12 and just college football in general. But I think you're right. You can have some of the best cornerbacks in the country, but they can only hang with the receiver so long.
And that goes back to, Jake, what you were talking about, though, when we were talking about the defensive lines, the questions with the Oklahoma and the Baylor secondaries, which you're going to be touching on. Okay, though, while those two units are young and inexperienced, but they've got some interesting players back there, they're going to need protection from those defensive lines, those veteran groups, to kind of let those guys grow up a little bit. And if they can push the pocket and compress the pocket on opposing quarterbacks to where those kids are being covered up for some of the mistakes they're going to make, that's going to help them so much more when we get deeper into November and to potentially if a Big 12 championship is on the line first week in December.
Yeah, I agree. And you know, talking this through, I'm just thinking that, you know, you can basically say the majority of the time, the first 3 seconds of any play is going to determine who wins the offense or the defense. You know, if the first 3 seconds the offensive line is getting great protection, the offense more than likely is going to get a successful play. Whereas if in those first few seconds, if the defensive line can be disruptive, you know, it doesn't matter who you have it. No, I wouldn't say it doesn't matter, but it definitely eases the weaknesses behind the defensive line if they're making something happen in those first few seconds, if they're pressuring the quarterback, making him move. You talked me into it. I'll go with the defensive line as the second most important unit, you know, if we're going to rank them all.
These aren't the
I'm not going with that. I'm going with the offensive line. And here's the reason why. A good offensive line will wear out a good defensive line. And if you can make 3 long drives, you can take a defensive line out of the game.
True.
I agree.
I love the fact that we all have different opinions on this, too.
Yeah, and I agree with that, too, Stephen. I think my thinking is that from Baylor's standpoint, you know, a good defensive line or just a good defense, period, is just a bonus. You kind of almost expect the offense, everything to be great. You got a good defensive line, that's just a bonus. You know, this team has not had a great defensive line since before the Big 12 began. And they have that chance this year. They had a good one last year. This one can be great. And so that's why I think it's a little more important for the defensive line to be good, because Baylor's not used to playing with guys who are just physical freaks and a chance to be disruptive. It's really going to be fun to watch and see if the defensive line is as good as Briles is touting it to be.
And I think we better enjoy Sean Oakman this year, because if he breaks out big time, I think he might be looking upstairs.
Well, I agree, too, and it's kind of that catch-22. You want him to have a great year because it's going to help your defense, but do you want it to be so good that he's gone and you don't have him for 2 years? You know, it's just that, you know, what do you really want? But I agree. If he has a great year, he's going to New York City for the draft.
Okay. Camp starts next Tuesday. And we're inside a month to the opener. Are you guys getting ready for some football?
Oh, of course. You know, it's we've had the most unusual summer on record, or at least in my lifetime, as far as cooler temps and the dearth of 100-degree days. So I will say, yeah, just the weather alone has made me have football on my mind much more often, and the fact that we're going to have some NFL preseason games on. We're going to have great camp coverage on Sikkim Sports of, you know, what's going on at Baylor practices. I think if you've got any bit of Texan in you, you're ready for football season now.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's kind of like one of those things where it's really become a 365 kind of sport, because the offseason is now getting so much attention via the media, online, social, whatever the case may be. You know, ESPN's obviously played a heavy role in it. Where every now little moment, whether that's going to be the draft or whether it's going to be the NFL Combine or whether it's going to be, you know, the opening up at up in Beaverton, Oregon, the Nike headquarters in July, you know, even state 7-on-7 tournaments, they're all kind of like the little they kind of keep your appetite wet for the game. And then when camp – it's like when camp starts – that first week of August, it's kind of like it's – everyone said, I can see again. I can absolutely feel it. I can touch it. I can – it's really, really close.
Yeah,
and it really means something. And so the excitement is always genuine. I look forward to it again. I always – you know, regardless of how the season goes, what I always hate, though, about the football season, that it moves too darn stinking fast. And by the time you turn around, it's late November and it's Thanksgiving, and I'm like, crud, where did it go?
I know. We're writing our mid-season Baylor review, and it feels like, you know, 2 days ago the season started. It does move way too quickly. Makes me think June Jones is onto something, having two football seasons. You know, the haves in the fall and the have-nots in the spring. I kind of like that idea.
Well, I'll have what June's having, whatever he was having that one day when he said that. So.
Probably in my time.
If you want to make the football season last a long time, watch the Cowboys, okay?
ain't that the truth?
Just listen to every Jerry Jones press conference, and the season will take forever.
Oh, man. I don't want this podcast to take a morbid turn, so let's okay. Let's not talk about the Cowboys.
All right, let's take a break then, and when we come back, we'll catch up on hoops and then close it out.
Get caught up with the latest in Baylor recruiting, basketball, and football with Friday's Baylor Blitz, a weekly staple from SickhamSports.com. It gives you all the details from every recruiting side, football moves, and everything from basketball, from recruiting to upcoming events. Sikkim Sports' Baylor Blitz, a Friday staple. It's been here since 2012, and it will continue to be here.
Welcome back to the Sikkim Sportscast. Kevin, I know that you've been following on all kinds of things, the Peach Jam, Las Vegas, Baylor following up in basketball on a lot of recruits. What can you tell us?
You know, they had a couple assistants out at the Adidas tournament in Las Vegas this past weekend. And really they've kind of stepped up looking at a couple of guards from Texas. Galena Park North Shore guard Kerwin Roach has Baylor offer, just picked it up recently. A 6'4 kid. He's a kid who's really been blown up here the last 2 weeks, shooting the lights out, really good score. And the thing about him, he's 6'4, so the fact that he has the ability to have some length to his game as a guard and not like a 6'1, 6'2 kid, but 6'4, really kind of plays in their favor. Then there's another kid out of Copper's Cove who's also a guard by the name of Rashard Odoms, and he's more interesting too. He's a three-star guard. He's picked up some offers here. He's got offers from Baylor, Oklahoma, Oklahoma State. He's going to go up an official to OU at the end of August. Nothing officially set with Baylor just yet, but he's a guy that they really liked when they were looking at him out in Las Vegas. And I think that's a guy that they will want to try and bring to campus here fairly soon. Nothing yet between either Tyler Davis or DJ Hogue out of Plano West, although, I still think that there is some feeling that if they get one of the two, I think it's going to, from what it seems like, it's going to be tough getting both of them. Excuse me. If they get one of them, I think they might have a better chance with Hogue than they would with Davis.
I think that
can change, but I think that's kind of where they're at. And you know, and of course, you know, they've looked at a couple of big men. You know, Jake, you wanted to interject about Davis and Hogue there for a second.
Yeah, I agree. I think anything in the 2015 basketball class is immaterial if you get Hogue and Davis, because you already have King McClure. I think you're looking at the most a three-man class. There are only, I think, three scholarship seniors right now, so you're not going to have the space. You don't have any other one-and-dones on this roster either, so you don't have much room. So I think Baylor's in such good standing with Hogue in particular that, you know, they're looking at guys in 2015. I kind of wonder how many true committable offers are out there while Hogue and Davis are still on the market, because I think those are your targets 1A and 1B. And if you get both of those, you shut it down.
There's a couple of really intriguing 2016 big men out there. A kid by the name of, for fans who may not follow basketball recruiting as intently, a four-star center from Plano Prestonwood by the name of Schneider Harrar. Baylor has not offered him that, but they watched him multiple times over the weekend in Las Vegas. They really like him a lot, although, and there's still no word about whether or not they're going to bring him to Baylor for a visit just yet. But the other kid that they have offered is a 6'10", 210-pound center by the name of Jared Allen. He's from Austin St. Stephens. He's playing for Texas Pro, his AAU team. He's a kid that we put his video up on our site late last Friday night. And the one thing about him is that he's got such great touch around the rim. You know, he's a great finisher around the rim. There was one play, though, in particular that really stood out when I was watching his highlights. And highlights are what they are. They're kind of compressed, and you don't see the good and the bad or whatever. Yeah. Everyone shows on the dominant, which is fine. But at the same time, he made a jump hook shot from about 10 to 12 feet out that didn't rattle around the rim or hit the backboard or hit the back of the rim. And I mean, it was bottom of the net when he released it from his hand. And that's not something you can coach. You either have that skill or you don't. That kid's really, really impressive. They watched him, obviously, 2 weeks ago. They've been on him for quite some time. He's a kid that everyone's going to watch here. He's only going to get better. He's number 42 in the Rivals 2016-100. He's already got offers from Baylor, Houston, KU, Kansas State, SMU, TCU, and UT. So you think about a kid like that whose recruiting will probably skyrocket even more because he plays for a private school down in Austin.
Yeah.
But he's a kid that's really going to just bubble up even more here very soon.
Yeah, I completely agree. It's Jared Allen. Jared Allen. Yeah, he goes to St. Stephen's. That's a small school in Austin. Which, you know, one thing about high school basketball is it almost doesn't matter where you play your high school basketball as long as you're, you know, playing AU ball and getting on the circuit there. So, but I agree, Kevin. I think he's a guy who's going to blow up. You know, you get those offers already. He's only going to be a junior. It's a good thing you're in early on a guy like him because I think his stock is going to just keep going up.
I think from talking to Eric Bossy, our national basketball writer, just a couple of other guys that have covered events for Rivals, you know, wherever Baylor has watched a kid, when they watch Allen play, and he was at the Great American Shootout in Duncanville last week, but it just when they watch him, though, and it's not only Baylor coaches, but anybody else who watches him, you just kind of stop and you sit there and you watch, and time doesn't move. You just kind of sit there and watch the whole thing unfold with him.
Okay. One thing, either one of you guys, it seems like in basketball that, like, it seems like you're rebuilding the whole roster almost every year. The basketball teams just seem to change so much faster than the football teams.
Well, and they especially do when you have guys leaving early for the pros, Perry Jones did. You know, Perry Jones, you put him on a football field, or as a football recruit, one of the top recruits in the nation, you know, you got him for at least 3 years, maybe four, so you're really getting all the value out of him. Same with Isaiah Austin. If he's a football recruit, say he's a stud offensive tackle, you have him for, you know, 3 years as your starting left tackle. You know, it's different in basketball. These guys leave early. Baylor's had a ton of guys transfer out just because they couldn't get time. LJ Rose, one of the most recent ones, he's now starting in Houston. So, yeah, you do. There is more turnover more quickly in basketball. But I think this year, I think they're kind of out of that rut right now. I wouldn't say rut. They're out of that right now just because, like I said, there's not a one-and-done on this roster. And, you look at the seniors, Kenny Cherry, Royce O'Neal, and the juniors behind them, the guys like Rigo Gathers, sophomores, freshmen, there's not any guys you expect to leave early. So I don't think you're going to have as much turnover, and that's why I think this class is going to be small. Not what I think. I know it's going to be small, and I think the next one will be too, just because the roster is a little more settled and you're not going to have these transfers or guys leaving early.
You know, two other guys, two other 2016 guys that I don't want to leave out of this podcast is one, the 6'9 big man, 2016 out of DeSoto, Marcus Bolden, who's also on the Texas Titans. He's kind of playing next to Tyler Davis in some respects there. And then you got a guard, Jake and I both talked to Malik Monk out of Bentonville, Arkansas. He's getting a ton of looks. He had a great AAU season, that sort of thing. So I think that's a kid that everyone's going to look at here really quick, and he's got a ton of offers. We'll see if Baylor can really make a push.
Well, I'm glad we could sneak basketball into this podcast. You know, it's almost sacrilegious to talk basketball when football season's a month away in Texas, but you know, there's a lot going on. Summer's huge in basketball recruiting, so I'm glad we could fit it in.
Okay. Unless there are any last thoughts, I think it's about time for us to wrap it up then.
Okay. All right. Enjoyed it as always, guys.
Okay, and we will see y'all next week on the Sikkim Sportscast.
The Sikkim Sportscast is an independent opinion and analysis-driven program from the staff and does not represent the views or opinions of either Rivals or Yahoo. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next week.